You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, if I say I'm an oil man, you will agree. I've traveled across half our state to be here and to see about this land. I'm a family man. This is my son and my partner, H.W. Plainview.
You boys are a regular family business.
You boys are a little late.
What'd you find?
Well, I found some interesting prospects. I have many wells flowing at many thousand barrels per day. I can guarantee to start drilling and to put up the cash to back my word.
What's this? Why don't I own this? I'm prepared to give you $3,700.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Retrospective. I'm your host, Kale Smith. Joining me today is Brandon.
Hey, everybody.
And today, on this episode, in the penultimate finale of the Oscar edition of the Youth Critic Retrospective, we will be talking about Paul Thomas Anderson's
There Will Be Blood.
So for everyone that doesn't know already, the movie was nominated for, let me pull it up. It was nominated for,
can I guess and see if I can get them all right?
Eight nominations.
See if I can guess each one, because I don't have it pulled up here. Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor. He won Best Actor for this one. It won Best Cinematography, Robert Ellswood. Best Editing, it's five.
Okay.
I'd probably say Best Costume Design, just a guess.
What's the others? There's about two more you haven't mentioned.
Two more? Okay. Ooh. Best Screenplay, Adapted.
Oh, no, I meant three, and, sorry.
Sorry, that's my ringtone. I can't think of the other two.
The other two, it did not get a nomination for Costume Design, but okay. It did get a nomination for Best Art Direction and...
that makes sense.
And you were right on the film editing, but it also got nominated for Sound Editing as well.
Oh, okay, cool. I wouldn't guess that. Always forget about the sound ones.
Yeah, well, usually sound goes to like the bigger spectacle pictures, but in this case, they did nominate it for best sound. But yeah, it was, to kind of list them in order, it was Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor Daniel Day-Lewis, Best Adapted Screenplay Paul Thomas Anderson, Best Art Direction, Best Cinematography, Best Film Editing, and Best Sound Editing. Paul Dano did get absolutely snubbed, even though he was nominated for a BAFTA, and then, wow, the Golden Globes really snubbed it, because they only nominated the movie for Best Actor and Best Golden Globe, or Golden Globe for Best Picture, but it was eight nominations, and it was competing next to, No Country for Old Men, and Juno, and Michael Clayton, and Atonement. We'll get into No Country for Old Men's nominations and how much they had next week, but yeah, this was very competitive, and I don't know, Brandon, how much you remember of that Oscar season, but this was, like, it was the There Will Be Blood versus No Country for Old Men. That was
definitely.
I mean, yes, there were three other nominees, but really, I mean, it was that it could have gone, and it really could have gone either way, because everyone was just, because both pictures were very highly acclaimed and both had, you know, and both, you know, had kind of the right, you know, stories, kind of, you know, the kind of right, you know, marketable Oscar stories. And they both featured just Oscar winning performances. Like, both movies were going to win Oscars for at least a performance. Like, it was just guaranteed. Like, I mean, Daniel Day-Lewis was pretty much in the bag for Best Actor. And then, of course, Javier Bardem was definitely in the bag for Best Supporting Actor. So, for No Country for Old Men. So, it was definitely, like, it was just looked upon that these were the two that were going to, you know, either win. Some people did pin Juno at one point as a dark horse, but
Mo did Ruby Blood actually win a Best Picture award at any kind of awards ceremony? I don't think it did.
I'm looking at it right now.
I think mostly No Country for Old Men had it in the bag. I think it was pretty much assumed that that was going to win. That was the first year I watched the Oscars, but even I understood probably it was a 90% chance of winning that year. But
Yeah, it didn't win any major Best Picture awards. Because I think No Country for Old Men, as I'm looking at Wikipedia, but I mean, Daniel Day-Lewis pretty much won across the board in every acting award. Definitely. So Brandon, starting with you, what did you think of There Will Be Blood?
Just real quick, this is usually considered to be the best movie of the decade. A lot of lists and a lot of critics choose this one. I wouldn't go that far, but this is one of my favorite movies. It's right up there for me. Yeah, it's a great movie. It has a great performance, a great lead performance by Daniel Day-Lewis. So definitely one of Paul Thomas Anderson's best, one of his best movies. Let's see. I didn't rewatch this one, so I'm trying to remember it. It's been a couple years, but I mean, all around, it's a great performance. It's a great screenplay. Not too artsy for what it's trying to do. I think the problem with Paul Thomas Anderson now is, especially with The Master, I remember seeing that one, and it just kind of went off the rails in a few scenes. His moves have become more and more like artsy and kind of pretentious over time.
Experimental. In my opinion.
Experimental, yeah. Well, that's one way to put it. But this is kind of like the peak of when he was making movies for like that could be enjoyed by, you know, because There'll Be Blood, it's a highbrow movie, but it can be enjoyed by a lot of people, I think. It's not really, it doesn't go out of its way to be weird.
Enjoyed is a very strong word, Brandon.
What's up?
Enjoyed is a very strong, is kind of a strong word choice.
Yeah, but I think people can get drawn into it. I mean, I think that it's not one of those movies where, I mean, they may not like the ending. That's the part that probably would split people down the middle. But I think that most people could get drawn into this character and the way it's presented. Unlike The Master, because I mean, that movie is not for everybody. You know, it's not.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I haven't seen his more recent ones though. So
I would even dare. Well, I would say I have not seen The Master either because so many people have said it's not that good.
It's okay.
It's only recently that he has done Phantom Thread that now I hear a couple people like say that The Master is a masterpiece.
There were people back then who thought it was a masterpiece, but they were diehard Paul Thomas Anderson fans. And to be honest, I was too until I saw The Master. Like, that was the first one I didn't like of his. So I literally liked every single movie he did up until that point. So it wasn't for me.
For me, what broke me was Inherent Vice.
I didn't see that one because I heard it was bad. So.
Well, the problem with Inherent Vice is it really is like trying to listen to someone who is on LSD and while smoking pot at the same time. That's what Inherent Vice is like. It's trying to comprehend a story from someone who cannot coherently bring a story together, because the story of Inherent Vice is basically it goes off of multiple subplots and multiple, you know, vignettes that really don't really coalesce to anything and don't really come together in an interesting way. It's like if the big, it's like a more LSD version of the Big Lebowski. But if the Big Lebowski just decided to be even less satisfying. Or less climactic than it already is. Which, that's not a dig on the movie. I love the Big Lebowski, but that's the best way I can describe Inherent Vice. And then Phantom Thread is like one of the funniest movies. It's like one of the best movies to see with a packed house. Because it's just so weird. That it's so weird that it's comical.
I saw some reviews for it, and I just curiosity, I read what happens just to see, and like it sounds like a weird plot. I'll check it out because I'm kind of curious now to see what's like how he filmed it. But I guess I'll check that. It doesn't look very good in my opinion, but I'll give it a chance.
Not to go on a tangent, but what have you heard about the movie?
What, Phantom Thread?
Yes.
Well, I watched a review. The way they were talking about it, I was just curious. I just read the synopsis of it. Because I don't care about spoilers. I don't really. I just read what happened. So,
okay, because I have seen the movie. It was, it's about a month ago, but I remember sitting in a packed house in Atlanta and just being like, and just watching everyone snicker at the movie because it's weird, but it's kind of a darkly weird comical film. And I've come in, the more I've thought about it, ever since Gene and I did the podcast on it, Gene Versa, and the more I've thought about it since then, and let us do, I've just become more accepted of its nature and kind of given it more of a pass than I did, I think, on the podcast I did for it earlier.
Okay, I'll check it out later. When it comes out on DVD.
Yep. As regarding There Will Be Blood, I really do enjoy this movie. I shouldn't say enjoy as much as it's beautiful. It's a beautiful, haunting, thrilling epic to watch. Like, it's different than most Paul Thomas Anderson movies. Like, I would say, and granted, I've not seen The Master, and I've heard that one also kind of has some terrifying aspects as well. But this one is so different from what Paul Thomas Anderson normally does, but it's so epic and so well crafted, and Robert Elswood's cinematography is so fucking beautiful that you just can't help but get immersed into it for all 2.5 hours of it.
Totally, yeah. On a technical level, this is like a perfect movie because, you got the cinematography, editing's pretty good. You got a really great soundtrack because, if I remember right, it's a lot of violin playing, which with the way they build it up makes kind of like symbolizes his, descent into madness kind of, And they also have like this cacophony kind of like, music going on in the background too at certain points. If I'm remembering right, it's a unique soundtrack for a movie. Normal kind of orchestra kind of thing.
Yeah, Johnny Greenwood did an excellent job, and it does. It not only does the music get more menace, but the camera work does as well. Mm-hmm. And, you can see it in the performance of Daniel Day-Lewis as well. That's why he won the Oscar, because he plays that brilliance so well, and Paul Thomas Anderson wonderfully paces it out throughout the film. So it's not like we're just jumping from... It's not like we're like jumping from mild manner to crazy from scene to scene. It's like moving a dial up through a 2.5 hour pace.
Yeah.
Of craziness leading to the drink your milkshake scene.
Yeah. It's a great quote. Yeah. It's funny that everybody quotes that, but a lot of people haven't seen the movie, so they don't know what's from. You hear a quote every once in a while, the I drink your milkshake thing, but it's not a famous quote like in a lot of ways of, other quotes from back in the day, but it's people. It's just kind of a funny thing you hear every once in a while. But.
Yeah, but can I ask you a question? What is your interpretation of that scene? Because it's a great scene, and I really love it, and I get like how it fits into the, you know, what Plainview is doing to Eli in that scene, but I'm wondering why it became so famous.
I think because it was so funny, and like it was the last. You mean the quote itself, or like that scene entirely? Like what?
I guess the quote, because it's right. Just one of those things where it's like, how did this become famous?
It's like a metaphor because the milkshake's supposed to be oil, but I think it's just the way he delivers it's so funny, and it happens in this scene where it's supposed to be taken seriously, or it is serious because it's the very last scene in the movie, and it just kind of comes out of nowhere. So, but he plays it so well that you kind of, it's just showing how crazy he is at that point. And how just, you know, I mean, literally kills him a second later in the very last scene of the movie.
Yeah.
And it's just a funny line to have in that scene at the climax of the movie, I think. But man, I think that's why people like it. It's memorable.
Yeah, it's a good scene. And because, and the reason why I was kind of asking, because even because I feel like, you know, the I am sinner and the abandoned my boy, the scene, I feel like that's more powerful and much more, you know, like that would be the most quotable thing. And to a certain degree, it has. I mean, it's even, you know, been parodied on Saturday Night Live. So, well, I mean, with also the milkshake thing as well. So,
Yeah,
it's just, it's very interesting how that's all, it's just interesting to see where it goes, because the whole movie, the way I have interpreted it as, you know, it is about a man whose greed comes, just overtakes him, his obsession with becoming something more than just a miner, and becoming something more than the people he, you know, hires. It's his obsession over that.
Yeah. Well, it's not really a plot-driven movie, and I kind of like that with a lot of movies. They're, it's more character-based, and it's really just it's his greed versus Eli Paul Dano's character. His last name's, I forgot about that. All right. There we go. Makes sense. Paul Dano, Eli Sunday's like, religious fervor, you know, it's like it's greed versus religious paranoia, you know, it's just that kind of, and that makes sense because it takes place turn of the century, I think in 1900 roughly. That's two realistic characters at the time, you know. It was based on a book, but I'm not sure if that book's based on real life, or it's Upton St. Clair, so it may be, but I know he does a lot of nonfiction, but, so it's not really it's not plot driven, because the only plot points you could really point out is the opening scene when he takes the son, the baby that becomes his son. After his father dies, he takes him as his own, and the part where obviously the son has to go away after the accident.
Right.
And really, the only other plot point is that guy pretending to be his brother coming to basically
Henry.
Get money from him. Yeah. And so it's, and obviously, I mean, it's just basically the tension rising between him and Paul Dano. And it's done so well that, you know, it's an interesting movie because it doesn't follow that kind of like three act structure, like the, cliffhanger kind of, it's just a great drama in that way.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, well, and also Paul Dano's character, like he basically represents, like the kind, you know, he kind of represents I'm blanking on the word, but he represents the kind of, you know, like Plainview is the like successor, like the master of filling into capitalism. He is the master of capitalism. And the master, he's mastered that, the use and the craft of it. Whereas in the end, where in the end, Eli is the, you know, kind of he represents kind of the failure of it, the failure of the people who don't want to, can't take, the people who can't take the risk, or people who are going to easily be fooled by the persuasions of the, you know, the luxuries or the idealism of what, you know, what one system can bring.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant how it's kind of woven into the story, because really the story of There Will Be Blood is a more of a story of the idealism of a certain system that promises to uplift entire cities or uplift entire communities, but ultimately it leads to the corruption of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the corruption of one man because of his because of his self-induced journey to become, you know, better than everyone else, to become, yeah, you know, the become the competition. So yeah, that's,
well, they're both promising the same thing. They both want to improve their community and make, you know, for their own, by their own means, but they end up both corrupting it in different ways. You know, they're both crazy, essentially. They're both like extremists in their own way, and troubled people, you know.
Yeah.
And we only end up siding with Daniel Day-Lewis Daniel Plainview, because he's the protagonist, and at the very least there's some sympathy at the beginning for him adopting the kid.
Well, we're following him as he descends the whole way through.
Yeah, he is the main character, so we do sympathize with him, but he's not the hero. He is a villain, you know, and so is Paul Dano. It's just,
mm-hmm.
you know, what do you expect from an oil guy? You know, it's like, that's kind of you see it all play out, and by the end, there's pretty much no sympathy for him anymore. But in my opinion, that's fine for a movie. I don't mind those movies at all, where it's about the rise and fall of someone, you know. When it makes sense, when it's not too obvious, but.
Well, there is sympathy in between these two characters because we feel bad that they have gone down this, because we've seen now that they're at the end of where this journey goes, and it's a deadly turn. And of course it leads to blood.
Yeah.
Like the title.
Well, says. I admit I didn't have any sympathy for Paul Dano's character. I thought he was the antagonist throughout the whole movie, but yeah, I understand what you mean. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. So, is there anything else more to talk about There Will Be Blood? Because it's an interesting movie, and it really, and I can see why this was like in the race, why people were like putting it against No Country for Old Men, even though No Country for Old Men was pretty much winning everywhere.
Yeah. No, it's really good. I don't like it as much as some of the critics do, because, I mean, they love this movie. Like they say, it's the best of the decade, and I mean, that's fine, because it's a good movie. It's probably, it may be my top 10 of the decade. I'm not sure. I certainly wouldn't disagree with that, but it wasn't my, No Country for Old Men is still my favorite of the year. Yeah, I mean, No Country is still my favorite of the year, but it's definitely a close front runner, or a close runner up. So it's great.
Yeah. I don't know where I put this yet. If I had to make a top 10 of 2007 right now, but this is fantastic. It's, and I think I don't know if I mentioned this yet, but I, as much as I love Paul Thomas Anderson's Boogie Nights, this one feels like the most epic of his films. The most,
I prefer Boogie Nights over this one, actually.
It's the most, like I said, scale.
I think Boogie Nights is longer though, actually. Let me check and see.
Well, length doesn't always mean epicness. It doesn't mean wide scope and epic and wide,
well,
wide scale.
I don't really think the word epic means much, honestly. And besides, unless it's actually like an old time like war epic, they're both kind of epic in different ways. Let's see, what's 2 hours and 38 minutes? Let me check and see. It's just out of curiosity, because, well, you know, it's pretty long.
Much longer.
Oh, the same length, 2 hours and 36 minutes. So they're 2 minutes difference. So,
yeah.
So it doesn't matter. But yeah, I prefer Boogie Nights personally. Just for the, I mean, it's one of my favorite movies. So, but There Will Be Blood's a very close second, though. So,
yeah, and I mean, and to be honest, Boogie Nights is one of his career, because after that he went on to do Magnolia, and then he did Punch Drunk Love, and then took some time away to do some commercials and whatnot, and then did this glorious epic.
Yeah.
And then a few years later he did The Master.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, it's been downhill since after 2007, really, unfortunately. Unless Phantom Thread's that good. I haven't seen Inherent Vice, but from what I heard, it's not very good. But yeah, it's unfortunate that... because I'm not even a huge fan of Magnolia, but at least I remember liking it enough, though. I remember enjoying it. Same thing with Punch Drunk Love. I haven't seen that one since I saw it, but I remember liking it, though.
Right. So, with that said, do you want to put a cap on There Will Be Blood on this oil thing?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So, Brandon, you still don't have Twitter, right?
No, I don't have Twitter.
Okay. All right. You can find me on Twitter at MovieKale. You can also follow this podcast at The Youth Critic, and you can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast at The Youth Critic. Next week, we will be talking about No Country for Old Men next week and wrapping it up, and we'll be kind of talking about the show itself, the Oscar show itself, and then... that's it for the Oscar edition for the Youth Critic Retrospective. Brandon, thank you for coming on this week. Yep. And we will be back next week. See you guys later.
I'm prepared to give you $3,700.
No. We have oil here. That's worth something.
What would you like, Eli?
My son is a healer and a vessel for the Holy Spirit. He has a church.
Oh. You will be cast up and thrust back to perdition.
We build a pipeline and we do a deal with Union Oil. Then we're making money, making the real money that we should be making.
There's a whole ocean of oil under our feet. No one can get at it except for me.
We'll offer $1 million for full title.
When do we get our money, Daniel?
I look at people and I see nothing worth liking.
See, this broke you and I beat you.
I see the worst in people.
We have a sinner with us.
Get out of here, devil!
I have a competition in me. I want no one else to succeed.